Welcome to episode 10 of Open Source Underdogs, the podcast where we discover new recipes for open source business models from around the world. Frank Karlicek is a free software developer, entrepreneur, and privacy activist. He is the founder of Nextcloud, which is self-funded and employee-owned. For those of you who don't know, Nextcloud has been an incredible success story with over 1,000 contributors and 50,000 plus commits. Frank is a true open source hero and inspiration. Frank, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks a lot for having me.
So tell us about yourself. How did you get involved with free software?
Yeah, this happened like over 20 years ago. I think it was around like 96. A friend of mine showed me a desktop running OpenSUSE or SUSE at the time with a KDE desktop, KDE 1.0 beta something, I don't remember. And I looked at it and, wow, that's nice. That's all free software. It's all done by this community around the world. There's no real company around it. It's all self-organized and it looks so much better than Windows 95 at the time, I thought. And of course, like I thought, yeah, well, then next year this will of course conquer the desktop. And yeah, and then I got involved in the KDE community and yeah, fighted for the Linux desktop for a long, long time. But yeah, then things changed over time.
So Nextcloud has an interesting history. It's a reboot of a previous company and a project called OwnCloud. In your 2016 blog, you mentioned a few changes for contributors, including no dual licensing, no requirement to sign a contributor license agreement, trademark held by a foundation, and making development planning a public process. Can you talk a little bit why each of these considerations were so important? Let's start with no dual licensing. What do you mean by that? Doesn't Nextcloud currently have enterprise features too?
Yeah, that's a very big question. So where should I start? So the thing is that the Nextcloud community and also a lot of the core people in the Nextcloud company, they have history in the former project that I also founded, but then wasn't that successful at the end. So because of the history, we decided to do some changes, as you mentioned. Lots of those decisions that were influenced by mistakes or problems that happened before in the former project. So you mentioned dual licensing. I mean, maybe I should explain what it means. Open source software is free software, is available under free software license. Obviously, otherwise it's not an open source project or free software project. The concept of dual licensing is that there's also a second license that if you want to use the software, then you can basically choose between two licenses. And the concept of dual licensing usually means that you have a free software license. A second license is usually not free software. It's like a proprietary license usually. And this proprietary license means that you have additional rights. You can do more things that you can't do with the open source license, but to get these rights, you have to pay. So it's usually a business model from companies who say, hey, you can use the free software version, or you can use this other version, but for that you have to pay. This sometimes has for the user the benefit that they don't have to follow some of the restrictions of the free software project. So a free software project as Nextcloud means that you can, of course, use it for free and you can change it. Obviously, but if you change it, you have to contribute your changes back to the community. And if you don't want to do that, you can pay other companies, not like us, to don't have this responsibility. But we don't really like this concept. So the Nextcloud community has a strong opinion that everything should be open source and free software, and that we don't really like this proprietary licenses. So we don't do this at all.
I see. You know, when you mentioned that in OwnCloud, contributors had to sign a contributor license, I found that somewhat unusual. I've actually never heard of that before. Hmm. Why do you know why they implemented that change and yeah. Why did you want to get rid of it too?
Yeah, this is something I should have mentioned. You can only do this dual licensing if you have the complete ownership of the code. If the company owns the code, then the company can release it under different licenses. And if you want to do this dual licensing, you have to own the code. So this means that every contributor has to give the ownership of the code to the company. And this is usually done via a contract This is the contributor license agreement that every contributor has to sign. And then the company owns the code, and then they can do this dual license thing. And as I mentioned, I'm not a big fan of that. I don't think we should force contributors to sign a contract to give away the rights on their contribution. I'm a bigger fan of a community where this is not needed. So, for example, the Linux community, the Linux kernel, right? You don't have to do that. You would send a patch, and the patch is, of course, available under a compatible license like a GPL. And then it will be part of the software, but you don't have to transfer the ownership to, I don't know, the Linux Foundation or Red Hat or someone. I find this weird. And this is also other open source projects like GNOME and KDE that do it the same way. And Nextcloud also does it like that. So we don't require any contract or transfer of ownership from the contributors. That's something that happened in the past at OwnCloud, as you mentioned. And we don't do this, and we don't like that.
So OwnCloud took venture money, and then the company introduced, on the advice of the VCs, a dual licensing model. Mm. And at that point, the contributor license agreement was necessary.
Yes. Yeah. The thing is, if you're an investor, then, of course you invest in something that you want to sell later to make a profit. So you want to sell it to a high price, of course. And to do that, you need to have as much intellectual property as possible to justify this high price. And then it's really good if the company can say, we own all the code, we own all the contributions. But that's, in Nextcloud, we don't want to sell the company, so we don't care.
One of the things you mentioned was starting a foundation that owns a trademark.
Mm-hmm.
Did you do that at Nextcloud?
Yeah, that's in progress. This is something that we still have to figure out how to do it correctly from a legal perspective. It will be a German EV, probably, for practicality reasons. And this foundation will own, for example, a trademark, and then can license the trademark to the company. And this is a bit a safety net. So if there's any issue with the company, then the foundation could revoke this trademark grant and give it to someone else. Also something that the core group and me learned from the past. Yeah, I think the community needs to be protected from the success or not success of a company.
Have you made the planning process more public? That was one of the goals also. I know at Glue we prioritize features a lot based upon paying customers. But so how do you actually make the process public, but also run the business and give your customers the features they want?
Sure. So we use GitHub a lot. It's a bit controversial sometimes because it's nowadays owned by Microsoft. But GitHub is like the place for us where everything happens. Obviously, all the code is there, but also we use the issues, the bugs, and also the issues for feature planning. And there are also like some nice project management and some planning features in GitHub nowadays. And we use this for all the plannings. So you can go there and you can see the milestones, and you can see the text that are assigned to issues, for what version it is planned, and so on. So this is pretty transparent, and everybody can give feedback. And a lot of people in the community give feedback. Of course, we as a company, we also have customers, and the customers also have opinions, what they need. And of course, we listen to our customers, and if they want to have a feature, then we do it. But if we then decide that we do it, we also put it on GitHub and will be part of the planning, and everybody can give feedback. So yeah, for us, this works pretty nicely. And I think our contributor community is really growing nicely, and I didn't hear a lot of complaints. Actually, the opposite. A lot of more people join Nextcloud every day. So I think this works out quite okay.
Sometimes I warn entrepreneurs that VC money can actually kill you. It can help you, but it can also kill you. You mentioned in one of the articles that you said with venture capital, you have to limit yourself to doing things investors can understand rather than what users and customers ask. Is OneCloud a cautionary tale of how VC can go wrong?
First of all, I want to clarify that I don't really have a fundamental problem with venture capital. It's a fine model if everybody understands what it means. I think it's really difficult. I wouldn't say impossible, but it's really difficult to do it together with an open source project, because an open source community just has different understanding and different goals than a VC might have. So this is a challenge, and we don't do this anymore. One of the issues was that we have to do something that VCs understand. A good example of the past was that we had to decide which market we are in. So at the time, Gartner created or defined this enterprise file sync and share market, and UnCloud at the time was like, okay, you're doing enterprise file sync and share. That's good. But then our community decided to do other things. For example, implemented a nice calendar and email integration and contacts and all kind of communication features and chatting and so on. And if you talk to Gartner, they say, well, this is not enterprise file sync and share. This is groupware or this is whatever. You can't do that. They're confused. You're not doing it right. You don't have this product market fit. But I don't really care because we want to do what our users want and what our customers want. I don't really care if you fit a specific box from Gartner. And it's actually funny that nowadays Gartner changed their market from enterprise file sync and share to content collaboration platform. So actually, the new definition is very similar to what we are doing because we are doing communication and collaboration software. So it's, in a way, we are basically doing something before Gartner defined a name for it.
So without VC money, how did you fund Nextcloud when you got started?
Yeah, I mean, the first few weeks and months was of course a big risk because, well, on day one, we didn't have any customers, obviously. But very quickly, after a few months, we got a few very big ones. And actually, after, I think it was 6 months or something, we were actually profitable because we were very lucky and get a few very, very big ones. This was a bit of a gamble, of course, right? If you fund a company, you're not really sure how it goes, but yeah, this is how it worked out. The first few weeks was, of course, tricky because, I mean, we didn't start from zero. We started with 12 people already and 12 people want to have a salary. So the first few weeks was a challenge. But as I said, we are really happy that we got some customers very fast.
How do you segment the customers? Do they fall into any categories?
Every customer we have cares about security and privacy and on-premise and things like that. But they come from totally different backgrounds. So we have a lot of universities. We have classic enterprises like manufacturing and people really care about espionage and want to protect their intellectual property. We have a lot of customers from the public sector. For example, the German government is a big customer, so they use it for all the people in the German federal administration. Then we have like service providers who want to offer a service based on Nextcloud. So it's totally different, but they all care about on-premise cloud, basically. This is the thing that's the same for everybody.
How do you interact with customers?
So we do a lot of different things. I mean, we have the usual webinars and meetings and phone calls and workshops and things. But we also do events like an enterprise day. So we did this, like started this 2 years ago and then last year. And this year was biggest so far in Berlin, where we had a lot of people coming together for a day and discussing Nextcloud in an enterprise environment. It was so successful that we do this like at least 2 times a year now. So the next one will be early 2019. These are events where you can sit together for a day and discuss like things with the developers directly. Then we will do something like a customer, a product advisory board. This is something that we'll announce in a few days. This is a way that bigger customers can directly together with us discuss roadmap. So they want to have like more influence and we have a forum for that. Yeah. And in general, I think in general, we are very, very open and transparent organization. So we are really, I mean, every customer can look at GitHub and see all the things that is going on and under planning. So I think we are really lots of good ways to interact with customers.
So it's such a big community and you can't have a personal relationship with all the organizations that use Nextcloud. How do you sort of make that balance?
The thing is we really want to create a really good and stable product. So every time someone responds a serious issue with us, then we fix it. It doesn't really matter if it's a paying customer or someone from the community. I mean, there are other open source projects or companies who really say, like, we don't really care about the community at all. We only care about paying customers, but we also care about the community because at the end, it makes our product better, which helps everybody. Of course, we provide some kind of premium support for our paying customers. That's why they're paying us. So they have a phone number that you can call and direct email communication and access to like a knowledge base and some other things. This is, yeah, this is the premium enterprise support that I'm paying for. But overall, I think we really care about a stable product. So if the community also reports on GitHub a serious issue, we fix it in the same way.
Can you talk a little bit about how you're building the team? What are your thoughts about location of team members and how do you find people who become part of the team?
So this is something that's surprisingly easy for us because, as you mentioned, the community. So we have a lot of people that are active on GitHub. So if I'm looking for another developer, it's really easy because I can look into the existing contributor community and I find the right person and I usually approach the person and say, hey, what you're doing as a hobby at the moment, do you want to get paid to do the same? So finding good developers is pretty easy for us. And also like in other areas like marketing and sales, it's for us, it's easier than for other organizations because Nextcloud is quite well known and a lot of people use it already. And this all works out quite well. Of course, it requires that you work with a distributed team because the people we hire, they're not all in Stuttgart or in Berlin. So we really distributed. So actually lately I looked into our employee list and we have employees in like 9 countries at the moment. Then this requires that all the processes and everything we do has to work with a distributed team. But to be honest, this is a requirement anyway for our community because our community is also distributed. So as long as you have the processes and the tools to work like with people sitting in home offices and other places on this planet, then it's quite nice. So I'm really happy with our team.
Are you offering 24/7 support?
Mm-hmm. We do. Yeah. An important thing regarding support is that we don't really have a support team. Like other companies, they have a dedicated support team. Our support is directly done by the engineers, which makes our customers really happy because they directly has someone on the phone who actually understands what they're talking about, which is not always the case with other support organizations, and also helps our engineers to understand customer requirements better. It's a win-win. Of course, like if you work with engineers directly, they're more expensive than, I don't know, a random phone support person somewhere. But this is what our customers are paying for, that we really get like the best possible support. Yeah.
Do you feel like the support revenues is capturing the value that customers are seeing from the software?
So I need to clarify something. So we talked about support here a minute ago, but we don't really sell support. We sell a subscription. It's called an enterprise subscription. It's very similar to what you buy from Red Hat and SUSE and other open source organizations. And part of this subscription is support, but there's more in the subscription. For example, you also get help from us with scalability of the instance, with security hardening. We can do security reviews. You get like influence on the roadmap as discussed before. You get like maybe special packages for your, I don't know, Kubernetes cluster or whatever special requirements you have and so on. So you get a little bit more than just support. So what we're basically selling is like an insurance. So if you run like Nextcloud in your organization with like 1,000 people and it's basically mission critical, so it's really a big problem if your service doesn't work anymore, then you can get from us like a subscription. And this is basically like an insurance that you can make sure that it never fails. And we deliver everything to you to guarantee that it never fails. And part of it is support, but there's more around it.
How about renewals? How's your experience been with actually customers renewing?
We are quite young, right? The Nextcloud is 2.5 years old. We don't have a ton of experience with renewals at the moment. But I think so far, I think we had like 2 customers who didn't renew or something. And the rest, like hundreds, they're renewed. So this seems to work out quite well. It's also funny that the feedback we got from the 2 customers who didn't renew, they basically said, look, your software is so good, it never fails, we don't need your help, which is in a way great. I mean, good that the Nextcloud is so stable. But yeah, as of course, would be nice to have another subscription. But overall, like 98% of the customers, they are really happy with our subscriptions and they renew, yes.
So the company's still new, but have partners played an important role in the development of Nextcloud?
Partners are important. There are different kinds of partnerships, of course. I mean, we have more the resellers and the system integrators, who basically they're the organization who take Nextcloud and sell it to the market and implement it and customize it and so on. This is very important because we are a software company. We are not a system integrator organization and don't want to become one. And for that, we need partnerships. And this works out quite well. I mean, it's still early. I can say that we get a lot of requests from companies who want to help us. Actually, reselling those subscriptions through them is something that also happens. But I expect that it becomes a lot more in the future. And then we also have technology partnerships. So the thing is that Nextcloud is a software that is, yeah, can synchronize files and do communication and collaboration and other things. It means that you usually have to you should integrate it into other software that runs in your organization, like, I don't know, backup or storage backends or load balancing or monitoring or identity management as Glue, for example. So I know that there's a Glue connector, for example, for Nextcloud, and this is great technology partnerships. And we have lots of them, and I really like this a lot. I mean, this makes everybody stronger, and I think that more open source companies and organizations should like integrate into each other.
Elliot Horowitz, in one of the previous episodes, stressed how critical it was for open source companies to have a cloud offering. Certainly the value proposition of Nextcloud is on-premise and control your privacy, control your data.
Yeah.
But I bet there are a lot of customers out there who would love a cloud version.
Mm-hmm.
And there's maybe some advantages to operating a cloud service and insights that you might get in using your software. And there's a lot of friction these days between large cloud providers and the open source software that they're using, and not always contributing back to proportionally. You must have given some thought to launching a Nextcloud cloud offering.
Mm.
And what are your thoughts about that?
Of course, when I say that Nextcloud is on-premise software, it doesn't necessarily mean that every customer needs their own hosting center in the basement, right? And some customers, they want to host it like somewhere else. But this is usually, in our case, done by partners. So there might be existing partners of the customer, or that maybe work together with a service provider somewhere. Or we can recommend a service provider who hosts like Nextcloud for them. So this is usually the way that it works. We, as Nextcloud, most likely will never become a host or service provider for several reasons. First, I think that it might become a distraction for us. So as an organization, you have to focus. And if you like an on-premise and off-premise organization at the same time, it's difficult to focus. Then also, of course, our whole strategy, our whole mission is to decentralize cloud hosting. And if you become like the main Nextcloud hoster, and then it's just, exactly the opposite of what we want. And I also think that for customers, it's not great, because as a customer, if you're happy with just a random hosted version, like a Nextcloud instance hosted by Nextcloud, then I don't see a lot of value there, because if they're happy with that, I can also go to Box or to Dropbox or to Google, because it's very similar. If a service provider or a partner hosts Nextcloud specifically for them, then this is typically something that has some customization for the use case of the customer, or some integration with the existing software they have. Maybe they have existing identity management like Glue or something else. Then this partner will integrate with Glue, or integrate like specific archiving or backuping or monitoring, auditing requirements. So they can actually do this together with the customer. But if you would become like a one-size-fits-all generic Nextcloud hoster, then this can't be done, and then there is no value for the customer. Then they can just go to box.com and get something similar.
Are you worried about, let's say, a large cloud provider, maybe an Amazon or somebody else, making a ton of money off your software, but maybe not contributing anything back?
Yeah, I know the discussion at the moment in this area. other open source companies and projects who have an issue with that? I mean, what kind of contribution are you talking about? Because there is like code contribution. This is something that they have to do because it's HEPL, it's our license. So if someone would take Nextcloud and do like modifications or improvement, they actually have to contribute back or at least release patches or the software. So I don't think that's a big issue. Of course, someone could take Nextcloud and host it without our subscription, without our support contracts. And this already happens. I mean, there are a lot of service providers who do this already without paying us. I think it's fine. It helps to spread the message. It helps to give Nextcloud to more users. As long as there are enough customers and partners who work actively directly together with us, I'm happy with it. Actually, we promote it. If you go to nextcloud.com/providers, you see a long, long list of service providers who offer Nextcloud hosting, and lots of them don't pay us. I mean, some of them are actually partners and work together with us and contribute back like code and money and other things. But lots of them, we get nothing. But I think it's okay. I mean, it's free software. It's okay. You can do what you want.
So what are the biggest challenges facing the founders of new open source companies today?
Big challenges? Oh, there's so many. I'm a product guy. So first of all, I think you need a compelling, nice product. If you have a nice idea and something like 1.0 of a nice product, then of course the next challenge is to create a community around it, because without a community, you're way too small. So if you, and this is the same for a lot of tech startups nowadays. If you just have a great idea and you develop a product, it's really hard for you to compete against like the big guys. And an open source community can help with that, because then you are not only like 40 people like Nextcloud, but then you're suddenly 1,800 people. And then you can actually compete with the big guys. So the next step for me would be to build an open source community. Yeah, and then of course you have to figure out your business model. I think this is something that you have to do. I mean, if you don't do open source and don't have a community, then you can sell software licenses, which, yeah, might be easy to sell. But as I mentioned before, I don't think you can be successful with that, because then you're just too small. You have to stand on the shoulders of giants. You have to work together with a community, and then you have to figure out an open source business model. And I actually really enjoyed listening to the interviews of your podcast, the interviews of other founders of open source projects and companies. There's so much insight in it in this area. I mean, we decided to adopt the Red Hat and the SUSE business model with enterprise subscriptions, but I'm sure there are many other ways to do this. And I want to encourage everybody to listen to all the episodes of your podcast. There's a lot of insight about this question in it.
Thanks a lot. That's why we're at it. That's why we're asking you the hard questions. Do you think Nextcloud is an underdog?
Depends. I mean, it's always the question how you define a market, right? Because if you look at the open source self-hosted file sync and share market, then we are probably or most likely the biggest. So then we are not an underdog. We are the biggest. But of course, if we compare ourselves to like Dropbox and Google and iCloud and Box.com, then we are tiny. And then we are gigantic, a huge, huge underdog. So really, really small. I mean, they probably don't even know us, and we're just too small. Yeah, it depends on how you look at it. I mean, we had some nice growth the last few years, but yeah, if you really want to compete against the big guys, then the biggest challenges are in front of us, not behind us.
Where do you see Nextcloud in the next 10 years?
I really hope that we can somehow decentralize the internet and the cloud again. I'm really, really afraid of a situation where all the files on this planet are like hosted by 5 companies. I don't think that's a healthy and good situation. So I really hope that Nextcloud can contribute to a world where everything is a little bit more decentralized, self-hosted, on premise. I mean, it would be awesome if you could like help with that and become a significant player. So if like, I don't know, a few percent of the data of the people on this planet are hosted on like decentralized federated Nextcloud instances, this would be great. So this is what we want to achieve.
Do you have any closing advice for the next generation of open source entrepreneurs?
In general, I would say that being open in your communication and your planning and working together with companies and communities, that this is really key. I talk with other entrepreneurs in the open source and also outside the open source space. And sometimes I hear some doubts that I think they have to be, they have a special idea and they have to be secret and they have to be protective about their planning and their ideas because they think that they have this unique, yet this unique vision that no one else has. I don't really believe in that. I think you, if you try to protect your secret in your organization and your little room, then you fail. I think you have to be open and talk about it and get more people excited and build a community and a customer base. And then this is the only way. So my advice would be to be as open and transparent as possible. Don't be afraid of competition. Try to beat your competition with openness and transparency, not the other way around.
Frank, thanks so much for your time today.
Thanks a lot.
Special thanks to the Nextcloud team for hosting the meeting in Stuttgart. Transcription and episode audio can be found on opensourceunderdogs.com. Music from Broke for Free, Chris Zabriskie, and Lee Rosevier. Production assistance from Natalie Lau. Operational support from William Lau. If you really like an episode, please post a link to it on social media. Tune in next week to hear the story behind Apache Flink with founder Kostas Zoumas. It's a big data company that emerged from the Berlin academic scene to become one of the leaders in the industry. Until next time, thanks for listening.